Good afternoon. It's Monday, February 3rd. It's 1:07 and 2014, I should say, for the record. And call this meeting of the House Resources Committee to order. Present with us today so far are Representative Kawasaki, Representative Wilson, our Vice Chair, Representative Tarr, Co-Chair Representative Feige, and myself, Representative Sandler, Co-Chair. We also have joined immediately by Representative Hawker and Representative Tammy Wilson and Representative Doug Isaacson are with us in the audience. I would encourage, actually require everyone to kill your cell phones so they don't make noise on the PA and disturb our proceedings. Today the committee is going to be hearing three bills, House Bill 163, Regulation of Solid Fuel Burning Devices. We've been joined by Representative Seaton for the record. Second bill is HB 268, Big Bull Moose Derbies, and House Bill 244, Advisory Commission on Federal Management Areas, CACFA. And I'd like to take those up in that same order, House Bill 163 first. If members will recall, we did hear this bill in April of last year, and at that time set aside with the sponsor's assent that she would work with the administration to make a couple changes to the bill over the interim. It's coming before us now in a CS, that being version G for Gulf. And before we get you on the stand there, Representative Wilson, is there a motion to adopt the CS as our a working document? Representative Wilson.
I so move.
So moved. Any objection? We have adopted version G as the working draft of so CS for House Bill 163. And Representative Wilson, introduce yourself for the record and give us a presentation on what's been happening on this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. For the record, my name is Representative Tammy Wilson. I represent District 2, Fairbanks North Pole. As you will see that this bill has shrunk a lot, and for that is because we have had proposed regulations put forward by the Department of Environmental Conservation. So I'm going to go just a little bit over the review of kind of what got us here and where we're going from here. So the Fairbanks North Star Borough has been designated as a PM 2.5 non-attainment area by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency.
Representative Wilson, and for the record, we've been joined by Representatives Olson and Johnson. Thanks.
No problem. Thank you, sir.
And Seaton, who the gang's all here.
You mentioned me.
I'm glad you're all here. Wood-fired space heating devices, predominantly wood, pellet stoves, and hydronic heaters, are used by a growing number of Fairbanks residents to heat homes and businesses. The amount of wood burning has nearly doubled since 2006, which is a direct response to increases in the price of heating oil and the lack of low-cost, clean-burning alternative fuels. A governmental agency should not be allowed to shut down a resident's right to utilize a certified appliance burning approved materials unless an emergency arises. And that's what you will see in the CS before you, is that for an area to have their wood burning completely banned, it would take an emergency by the governor, and we have set it at 351 micrograms per cubic meter, which in the regulations that came before us, the proposed regulations, was what was set by DEC. The other part of the bill directly takes out of regulation and puts into statute the list of things that you should not be burning and cannot legally into your wood stoves or coal burners. And basically that is painted material, you know, even wet wood you shouldn't be putting in there, railroad ties, tires. And like I said, that list that you see before you was already in regulation. It puts it into statute to make our community feel, I guess it's a little bit to the next level, that people understand that you can't do things like that. The unfortunate part is that when people do that, normally it's a response because they can't afford the heating oil. Not condoning it, but I want to remind that this is all about a high cost of energy. And as heating oil has become more expensive, and those in the bush, we want to make sure we recognize that their expenses are much more than ours. But we have to turn to an alternative source, and that is using wood and or pellets. And as well as coal, we now do have more of our businesses, actually, who have turned to the big coal ones in which they augured in and they augured out, and they're finding out that these are even cleaner than some of the wood stoves that are being done by hand, where the stoves will cool down, and when they cool down, that's when they smolder more. We go in, we put more wood in, it has to heat back up again, and you have that going on throughout the day when you have a wood stove versus a pellet or coal that's an automatic feed that keeps it at that. And so there are a few issues that, and the reason why I ask you to hold this bill today is because I met with DEC this morning, and they were concerned that our bill might make it to where if someone is burning the incorrect types of items, that they would not be able to enforce those parts of the rules. That is not my intent. I want to make sure that we are talking about those who are using certified equipment and burning dry wood, not those that are abusing that power. So we're going to go back and speak to DEC about that more and get that changed. There also is a five-year sunset, and the reason there's a sunset date on this is that we hope by then we will have affordable energy. We'll be able to see it. The other part that I am discussing with the commissioner is that he might feel better at a two-year sunset versus 5 years. We are having to make what's called a state implementation plan, in which we're showing the EPA how we're going to get from one point to the next, but it's ever moving. We're always seeing the EPA lower the numbers more and more, and in fact, when they moved it, you know, from 65 micrograms per cubic meter down to 35, that's what put us in the problem that we currently are in. If they'd stayed there, we would have been okay for a few more years. However, because we are burning more wood, I think even at this point, we would see ourselves being a non-attainment. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Representative Wilson. Questions in the committee to the Representative, Representative Feige.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page 1, line 10 of the bill, and maybe you mentioned this during your presentation, the 351 micrograms, what's the significance of that number?
In the proposed regulations that DEC brought to our community, that's what they said is an emergency. They had two different types of episodes, but that was the emergency level. So we just took it right off their proposed regulations.
Okay. Okay. Question, Representative Kawasaki.
Yeah, just a follow-up on that. 350 micrograms, is that, I mean, is it an acceptable level? Do they have an acceptable level for pollution? And can you explain, again, because I don't know what the regulations are. I don't know about the regulations yet.
Representative Kawasaki, through the chair. That's what they set at the point for emergency. Again, I also did talk to the commissioner about that and told him I wasn't married to that number. If he thought there was more of an acceptable number, that we would be happy to speak to him about that. I just, again, I'm not an expert at that portion of it, so I took the number that they had in our proposed regulations.
All right, just follow up.
Follow up.
I guess just, you know, I don't know if 351 micrograms is a moving target that EPA is constantly trying to ratchet down. So if it's in statute, it seems like we'd have to change the statute if acceptable limits were either raised or lowered. So why would we do it statutory as opposed to regulatory?
Representative Kawasaki, through the chair. Right now, we have to get down to actually 35, not 351. You know, what an emergency is to where the air has risen to a certain level, and that's what has to be determined, whether or not how far over that we would call it to such a state to where we would call it an emergency. What I've tried to do with this bill and with this part of the emergency is look through the eyes of my constituents on, I go to work, and I have my wood stove burning when I leave. The proposed regulations talk about if it gets to an episode, immediate action can be taken. We haven't seen the plan, so we don't know at this point what that immediate action is. But what if it meant that I had to leave work and go home and shut my wood stove down, hope that I have enough oil to last for the day, wait possibly for days until the air quality reaches a certain level? Can you actually ask a community to go through that kind of stress on a day-to-day type of area? I am absolutely all in favor of any volunteer shutdowns that need to be done to improve the change out programs that we currently have going, possibly looking at maybe subsidizing oil in certain areas that are worse so that we can see if people could afford it more, would they go down to that point of it. But to me, when you get to a point to where you are forcing people to shut down qualified stoves using the type of dry wood that they're supposed to and kind of group everybody together. It's like going down the highway, everybody at 55 miles an hour, and picking five or six cars because there's too many cars on the road. And so for me, this was a one way to say, yes, if it gets to an emergency level, I think we need to take it, you know, and look at it differently. But just based on any kind of episode, again, with a number and stress out of community, in my opinion, you live there, that are already not going to the movies anymore. They're not buying those extra things. Because it's about energy right now. And I'm thrilled that we've got things, you know, for gas and technology is improving. But what do we do until then so that people feel like that they could stay in our community? So that number right now is something I think that the commissioner will eventually come to, you know, our staff that he will bring on answering questions on what that number ends up being.
So just to clarify.
Second follow-up, Representative Kosky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what is, I mean, this piece of legislation doesn't really have what happens in the case of a 24-hour average air pollutant exception. So what's the thoughts that, because we haven't seen the regulations yet, we're trying to put statute that might supersede that. I guess what's your thoughts on what that regulation, what will happen if there is an exceedance?
Representative Kosky, through the chair. What this would do is that the only way, no matter what the regulations are written, you're right, it would supersede regulations that they wanted the number to be lower and their immediate action being a forcible shutdown. And absolutely, that is what I'm trying to prevent by taking it to the level of an emergency and to an elected official, the one that, who's the head of our state, that should be his decision and not a commissioner or someone else down the line when you're talking about this degree of impact on a community.
Okay. Thank you. The questions for the Representative Seaton Dentar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the prohibition under Section 2, I just want to make sure it's on the record. Waste petroleum products, we have a number of businesses that burn waste petroleum products. They're not burning them in a wood or coal designed furnace. They're burning something in a waste petroleum products. There's nothing in this bill that is going to impact someone burning waste petroleum products in a burner that's designed for liquid waste products. Is that correct?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, absolutely. That would not be a solid fuel burning heating device as defined.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to ask about page 3 here, the section lines 12 through 14, or yeah, 12, 13, 14 here, where it prohibits a state or local authority from having an emission standard that is different than the one adopted by the section, so that would be either.
Pardon me for interrupting. We've actually adopted the CS, and there's no page 3 in the CS, so I didn't want to see
it. I thought I had the CS.
It's version G.
My mistake. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. We'll hold that question for a second.
Okay.
Yeah. I've got a brief question, Representative Wilson. What are the consequences for violating the fuel prohibitions in Section 2? There's a big list of things thou shalt not burn. What happens if thou does burn?
Mr. Chair, there's a process that DEC has, and DEC is present today, that they write letters to let you know that you're not supposed to do it, and ultimately they can take you to court.
You can take you to court. What's the ultimate largest fine possible or sanction?
Mr. Chair, I have absolutely no idea. Okay. I burned the correct thing, so they have not written me any letters.
Good answer. Thank you. Not seeing other questions yet, I'm going to ask another question of mine. What there is a, let's see, page 1, line 9, unless the prohibition is authorized by the governor, is it your intention that it be the, by golly, governor or his designee, commissioner of DEC or other designee, or must it be the governor himself or herself?
Mr. Chair, I want the governor to make that call. He's an elected official. He's the head of our state. This could have a pretty major impact to an area of our state, so I would see it as being him.
Okay, good deal.
And just, Mr. Chair, and the reason we also see the other, as far as other groups, Juneau has already has a plan. This would not impact Juneau whatsoever. They're already have a state implementation plan. We don't want to have to do them, so they have been exempted out of this.
Okay.
And we're also going to be working with the municipality of Anchorage, who had a few questions today, and they're going to be sending me an email to make sure that they understand everything and we don't negatively impact them either.
Okay. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just clarified, there's not an exemption for those areas in here now. You're talking about putting that in, or am I not finding it?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, if you see K, except in a wood smoke control area, designated by the name and state on line 6, that's referring to Juneau. They are the only ones that are in a wood smoke controlled area designated by the name in state regulation.
Thank you.
And that's the city and borough of Juneau. That's a borough thing, right?
Mr. Chair, yes.
Okay, good deal.
Mr. Chairman, is DEC online to answer questions?
They're here.
They're actually here in person.
Okay.
If you want to, whoever the representative is speaking for DC, want to come up and answer what I think is the question? Oh, no. Okay, fair enough.
Whenever we're done.
Okay. Another question. Hang on there. Then the repealer and the Section 4, that's just, you're going to get rid of this all, assuming that good things are coming down the pipeline, down a pipeline. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, I think what it does is it brings it back to the legislature again to see if we haven't received gas or any other alternative plan. You know, do we need to continue this, or has technology even in the solid fuel burning devices improved enough with gasifiers and other types of appliances? Did the gas actually reach us? Do we have a pipeline by then? I know that would be pretty cool. So I guess for me it's kind of saying, state, we're really dependent upon you as far as how quickly some of these projects get to, you know, our borough, and then it's our responsibility to make sure it gets from whatever that is, whether it's trucking or pipeline, then it's, you know, on the borough and citizens to make sure that we have the distribution and we can get it to people.
Okay.
Just one more question.
Representative Kawasaki, question.
Yeah, just one more question on the making the governor be the authorizer of this particular prohibition. I know Fairbanks is in a different circumstance because Fairbanks doesn't have a local, they've ceded that control over to the state. But is that really the kind of policy we want, where the local community is not making the decision on air quality, and where the state actually makes the decision on air quality, and the governor?
Representative Kowalski, to the chair, the governor already has this power to do it during an emergency. Yes, I think I take it up a notch because I think absolutely it is for him to do, because so much of how we have done energy in the past with our electricity, with major projects, the state has been a big player in that. And so with that comes some responsibility with it. When it came to air quality and whether or not, you know, we were going to try to meet this, it was the state that made into it, that is in an agreement with EPA to get us to whatever the new number happens to be, no matter what that may take from the community. And so what I'm trying to do here is refocus that the community of Fairbanks is doing everything it can to bring the best technology and the best way to take older equipment into newer equipment to be able to make our air quality better. Mm-hmm. What we still don't understand at this point is, can we just get better, which is, there's nothing wrong with that, but the bottom line is, for the EPA, we must meet this number, and we can't even do it with just the best technology that's out there right now. It's going to take some other type of energy besides even heating oil, because heating oil is also puts PM2.5 in the air. And so if 5 years from now we don't have gas, or if the governor finds himself having to call an emergency a lot, maybe that puts the pressure on the state that I believe that they have to be a player in. We don't have the finances on a borough level, and nor should we have to put our money there when the state hasn't done it themselves, and I think that's why you kind of notch it up that level.
Thanks. Another question for you, Representative Wilson. Can you give a little bit of the background of the local ordinances and voter initiatives and whatever, for those of us who don't have the benefit of living in Fairbanks, to explain just kind of that background, what's going on in terms of local air quality authorities?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, again, as I said, we were at, you know, the numbers changed with the EPA, which was going to throw us in there. But we had another episode that kind of happened in 2008. Then Governor Sarah Palin gave us some money for energy and asked us to put it in energy needs. Well, unfortunately for our group, that particular month that they got it, our oil went up to about almost to $5 a gallon. You know, just about $3.75 to $5 over, almost what felt like it was overnight, as people received $1,200 extra plus their PFD, and some homes saw anywhere from $15,000 to $20,000. Well, at that time, they kind of went into a panic mode, and they bought a lot of these outdoor boilers. Outdoor boilers put out a lot, they're meant for big buildings. They're really not meant for homes. They were meant for farms, and when you're doing most of them. But at that time, it looked like a good way to save money and go out in the woods. I can cut it. I don't have to split it. And if you're listening, yes, you do have to split it. Our wood has so much moisture in it, you do have to split it. And so we had a lot of these put in there, which just increased our air quality issues even more for that. And so our borough then started coming up with ordinance, mostly because of the pressure from the EPA. The EPA only allows you credit, and that's what you're looking at, is credit, for changes that you've made to make your air quality better. They only give you so much credit for voluntary measures, even if they're working. So they really do put the pressure on, and I know the commissioner and I have had a few arguments the last few months, and I do know that he's getting a lot of pressure to do enforcement on Fairbanks to get them into compliance, because that's what the EPA requires. Although our inversions, our weather is the number one reason that we are having issues, and one thing I have yet to figure out is how to change the weather. And honestly, I don't want a lot of wind in Fairbanks. Negative 40 and wind really are not a good combination. So what ends up happening is, as you know, you have all the things, and we get a lot of complaints that it's got to be the big power plants. The big power plants fill up the top air shed. So you got the clouds, you got the thing coming down, and the next thing to fill up is the wood stoves, and below that are your car emissions. So it took me for a while to say, well, how could it be the wood stoves? Because look at all those big power plants. It's got to be them, because they're not filling up the same air shed that there is to it. So what we did is a wood stove change-out program to start with. The state was very generous in giving us funding to be able to do it. But the way that our borough has it is you have to have a borough employee come in and take a picture. I don't know how your communities are, but our group is not very friendly when government wants to come into our home. Take a picture of it. You then have to have the money up front. Again, as I explained earlier, we don't have a lot of upfront money right now. You have to change it out, put all the paperwork in, then bring that appliance and put it in versus in Libby, Montana, they did a one-on-one swipe. They just swapped them. And so it is working, but it could work more efficiently. But then when they decided to put out and start fining us for what they felt what was for burning during these times, the citizens put an initiative out. I am the citizen sponsor of that initiative. And every 2 years, again this year, we say that the borough cannot, you know, fine us for trying to heat our homes. And so it kind of put that on the state level. The state can do it. The cities of Fairbanks and North Pole can do it, but not the borough itself, because it's still our intent that as technology improves, as we get gas to homes, we just like cars. I know some of you are from Anchorage, so you know what the CO was. You know how your cars were checked. We didn't get out of our CO problem because our cars had a check every 2 years and $70 that we paid to them. It happened because technology got better and old cars died. Unfortunately, wood stoves do not die as easily as cars do, so people do become very attached to them. But when they do get these change outs and see how much less wood that they have to burn and how much hotter it gets their homes, they do it. But we've got to make it work that direction.
Good deal. Thank you very much. I've got two brief questions for you. One, the term air shed, do you mean like profile high, medium, low kind of thing? You use the term air shed.
Mr. Shed, the air shed is just the ambient air measurement that they do on the monitors.
Okay. Good. Second question is, use the term hydronic heater. What is a hydronic heater?
Mr. Chair, it is a big rectangle unit that sits out in your yard. They can be in your garage, but most of them are outdoor units. You can go out there and basically fill them once a day, and a lot of them will hook them up to their water heaters. It's just a bigger unit of a wood stove. And so you can throw bigger pieces of wood in it versus splitting it up and kind of getting it to a point to where it can dry better. And so they don't work quite as well because, one, you don't turn them up as high as what they need to be because you're not trying to heat enough area. And a lot of people, because in the lower 48, literally you can just burn logs. And here you can because they do, but you shouldn't.
Okay. You heard the word hydro. I think it's fluidized bed, not quite knowing what it is. It's just a honking big wood stove.
Mr. Chair, yeah.
Representative Feige and then Representative Tarr, if you have a question.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. It's Tarrant here from Eagle River, where they burn natural gas. That's all.
Thank you for the help of friends.
It's not hydroponic, it's hydronic. Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm just wondering, with the explanation of, you know, the ongoing problem and the inversions situation, certainly some of the items that are listed in this section 4614570, you know, are things that have fine particulate matter when they're combusted, and so, you know, have some influence over overall air quality measurements, and why that section is also in the repealed section, if that was something that was just considered appropriate based on repealing everything in that 2019, or might those be items that we would never want individuals to be burning in their stoves.
Representative Tarr, through the chair, the list of the 10 items mm-hmm. are things you're not to burn.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess I'm not hitting your question because those are what's listed in regulation. We just relist them here.
If I might, Mr. Chairman, this in Section 4, this section is repealed in 2019, the section that lists the items that are prohibited. So I'm just wondering if maybe that would be something we wouldn't want to repeal because we might not want people to ever be burning plastics and rubber products. But maybe there was some other consideration. That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Did Chair Representative Tarr? Good point.
Oh, okay.
Because it is regulation now, but with being here, that there the repeal was absolutely more in point for the first part versus mm-hmm. the second. So we will actually bring that up. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Feige.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is it possible there could be a technological advance in the next 5 years that would allow you to burn those more completely, so that they would not be contributing to air pollution? Possible, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Representative Feige through the chair. Absolutely. I mean, things have come a long way. It's hard to tell, especially with they have some dual sources now where I know that you could do heating oil, oil or whatever with a wood stove, and that could mm-hmm. happen. And so really what it would do at this point is that it would make you review all of it, and then at that point you could say we still don't want people to utilize these in the 5 years, and it gives them a great review. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the list, I'm wondering, and we understand that this is going to be all municipalities, Anchorage, and, or is it just going to be Fairbanks?
Representative Johnson, through the chair, it would be Anchorage as well as Fairbanks.
And so two questions. Anchorage does its own monitoring and its own, you know, they can do the emergency orders now. Would this prevent them from having that ability, setting a better standard or whatever?
Representative Johnson, to the chair. I do not believe so, but we are having those discussions with Anchorage. I spoke to them just before I came down here with some concerns that they had, and we will make sure that they are addressed.
Okay. And one
follow-up, sir.
And this, and since it does apply to Anchorage, there are people in Anchorage that don't necessarily burn for heat, but for an aesthetic, and so they have these treated plastic logs that you can buy at Fred Meyer by the case, put them in your fireplace and light the paper, and you get this long-lasting flame that, and with mood music, I guess it's better. it's not necessarily a heat source, but you would be burning a treated wood, probably with some petroleum products in it. Uh-huh. And I'm wondering if this would ban the sale or the use of that during the sale. You couldn't, I don't say you ban. Would that ban the use of that product during that period in any place?
Yeah, Representative Johnson through the chair. And I want to make sure I address two things. That is not my intent. We'll make sure that it does not. Also, Anchorage and Fairbanks and Juneau have air quality programs. But the next community who is probably going to have a PM 2.5 problem is going to be the Wasilla area, Matsu. And so this, as far as who could be shut down in that portion of it, that's for anybody in the state that a community couldn't have that shut down. But we will make sure that, and that's why I wanted the bill held, because I'm hoping there are others who are listening, and we can make sure that we have everything addressed.
And if I could just follow up a kind of a statement. I agree that rarely with Representative Kawasaki that we don't maybe necessarily want to put this in the state's hand, but that the city, especially in Anchorage, where we haven't given up that control, where we still do the monitoring, that we still maintain that as much as we possibly can without getting the state involved in it any more than we absolutely have to.
And Representative Johnson, through the chair, absolutely. And that's why it's just really on an emergency level. And the rest of this list that happens to be there, it's already in the state to do that. But it's not our intent to step on any of the municipalities. It's really just to make sure that when it gets to a certain level that it's going to have a possible huge negative impact, that we make sure that we know who's going to be making those calls.
Yeah. And just one thing, the fact that you're working and you have had contact with the Anchorage tells me that my question probably was answered before I asked it, but I didn't know. So I want to thank the representative for including Anchorage in that. Thank you.
Absolutely.
We have Representative Kawasaki, then Feige.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Tammy knows that we've been working on this issue of air quality and air pollution in Fairbanks for a long time. And so my question has to deal with the regulations that are currently being propagated and what impact, because I think we want a quicker solution, not a slower one, what impact this bill will have on the current regulations that have just been drafted and are in draft form now.
Rep. Kawasaki, through the chair, most of what and these are questions that I was able to make sure was true. The department saying that they wanted to only sell 2.5 grams per hour stoves, and the borough would still be able to be allowed in this. Could they still go after those people who were burning things that they shouldn't? We're going to make sure that that's clarified. That was the intent, but I talked to legal, and they said it could be much clearer in that portion of it. All volunteer-type activities could still take place, programs, any of those. It just takes it to a notch to where you're literally doing a complete banning of an energy source would make it clearer on who could absolutely do that portion of it.
I guess follow-up. So I guess the follow-up question is then that if we pass a bill like this and it passes through the legislature, it's going to take a long time for regulations mm-hmm. to be propagated off this bill. And I guess, you know, delay has caused a lot of people in Fairbanks to move. And I don't want to see any sort of delay in implementing some sort of a policy to get to the root issue, which is air pollution in the Fairbanks area.
Representative Kawasaki, through the chair, absolutely. And that's why we are going to make sure that the version comes back to you will not impact the majority of what's in that, those proposed regulations. I also want to make sure that it's clear to the committee that those are proposed regulations. They've gone back to DEC now to review. I hear they have hundreds of comments that they have to go through at this point. They're also going to be a state implementation plan that whatever regulations come out are going to be part of that. So, you know, if you're going to pass a bill right now making this kind of determination, this is more likely the time that it would not slow it down versus letting that plan be put out, let those regulations be done, and then say we don't like it. We want them to go back to the table and try again.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Feige. Then Hawker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I don't have the benefit of sort of all the in-between statutes here to see how this fits into the overall context of the law, because Representative Hawker has the book. But on Section 2, and going back to the list and the prohibition against burning all that stuff, I just want to make sure I understand it completely in my mind. Does that prohibition against solid what you burn in your stove, is that prohibition at all times, or is that only a prohibition when the governor declares an emergency and prohibits it?
If I get through the chair, you cannot burn those things in your solid fuel burning devices at any time. You currently cannot do
it. That's current regulation?
That's current regulation.
Okay. What about in a rural area where the, you know, there's really no significant detriment to the overall air quality, but in the case of, okay, say in the case of either a remote mining camp or a remote facility of any kind, it's prohibitively expensive to get rid of solid waste. So the most expeditious means of getting rid of that solid waste is by burning. And we're saying that's completely prohibited. There's no exemptions at all in regulation?
Representative Feige, through the chair, no, there's not. But again, we're talking about in a solid fuel burning device. Now, I think if you have a bonfire, and I'm sure they will correct me if I'm wrong, I think you can pretty much put anything in the fire you want, but not in your solid fuel burning device.
Okay.
But that might be something you might want to change.
Because there are incinerators at these camps that's how they get rid of all kinds of things, including some of those things on that list. And they tend to burn very cleanly because they're fan-driven, and, you know, the emissions. I mean, do we just want to ban something, or do we want to, is there something in the regulations regarding the emissions that come out of a particular solid fuel burning device?
If I get through the chair, incinerators are in their own, and I'm sure Representative Hawker could probably show you exactly where. But incinerators would not be included in here, and that's why solid fuel burning device is here, mm-hmm. and this is actually defined. And in anything that's defined in here, you could not put those in there. If you're in a area that's not urban, the odds of DEC finding you are probably little to none. But you still shouldn't burn them.
In your solid fuel.
In your solid fuel burning device, as defined here in the bill.
I'll go with that. Okay.
And Representative Hawker has a question.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, just looking at this in the context of the whole, and I did graze through the rest of Section AS4614-400, and I did not see, but I'm just wondering, when we go to page 1, line 10, page 1, line 10 is the, you know, that's the section here where we're, you know, saying that you can't prohibit this unless it's authorized by the governor. And then there's the 24-hour average of air pollutants for the region exceeds a certain standard. Is region a defined term, or is that, what do you mean by region here?
Representative Hawker, through the chair, that we took the terminology right off the regulations as proposed by DEC.
Okay.
So I am assuming that they have that definition. And I think, from my understanding, region, like we are a non-attainment area. And so most of the rules that we're talking about is that actual region that we're speaking of. And hopefully with the look of the co-chair, he's getting some nodding from behind me.
I'm just seeing we had Ms. Edwards there to answer any questions on DEC regulations.
I didn't mean to be putting anybody on the spot, but it just seemed very vague to me. If it's not defined, what is it? You know, is it a region encompassed by a certain geopolitical entity? Is it a region defined by geographic boundaries? Is it a region defined capriciously by a rogue state agency that wants to truly injure the people in your community? You know, all those sort of things.
Mr. Hawker, through the chair, I will make sure that that's defined. That's a very good point. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I don't trust those rogue state agencies.
That's why I'm here, sir.
Thank you.
Goodness. Any other questions?
Mr. Chair, but I appreciate the indulgence. For the light comment, it is a serious question.
It is, absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is the intent on page 1, line 9 and 10, that the governor can only authorize the prohibition if this other has occurred?
Right.
In other words, the governor cannot authorize, under any other circumstances, the prohibition.
Representative Seaton, through the chair, the governor could not, or anyone else, mandatorily shut down a region, as we will have defined, source of wood-fired devices, unless it was at that level. And that's one where we're going to be talking more to the commissioner about whether or not we got that number correct.
Okay. And is there a definition, or will there be a definition for treated wood?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, we can find that out.
Thank you. And Mr. Chairman, the reason I bring that up is Representative Johnson brought up truss logs. You know, we could even get into the situation in which somebody would sue us for pellets as treated. And so wanting to make sure that we have the definition there, so we're talking about chemically treated materials for that rot, or, you know, whatever that is. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
And I might add parenthetically, as I read this, only the governor can call the ban, and only if it meets, there's an exception, if there's an exceedance of standards. It's kind of only and only if. Is that
Mr.
correct?
Mr. Chair, correct.
Good. We have a couple other bills here we need to get to, and the sponsor has asked to hold this bill over. Are there questions that the department might need to answer at this point? Any other questions on members of the committee?
I do.
Representative Kawasaki for the sponsor or for the DEC?
The department.
Great. Thank you, Representative Wilson. If we can bring Ms. Alice Edwards, an air quality expert at DEC, to put yourself on the record and answer Representative's questions.
I'm Alice Edwards. I'm the Director of Air Quality for the Division, Director for the Division of Air Quality at DEC.
Thank you, Ms. Edwards. Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We know who you are. We've been working closely with you for a while. And my question that I had for the representative, the presenter of the bill, is how does this impact the current regulations that are being propagated by the division?
So that's a good question. And through the chair, Representative Kawasaki, and we're still looking through this version. We've had some initial discussions with the bill sponsor, and we'd like to clarify some of that so that we understand what the implications would be to the regulatory proposals that we do have, that have gone out for public comment and that we're considering at this point. But I'm not really in a position at this point to sort of speak to that until we've had a little bit more time to review what's here.
I guess. Just follow up, Mr. Chair.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just because, you know, I know that we've been going around and around whether this borough and the city should do something, and now that we can't, should the state do something? If so, what do we do? I mean, folks, you know, from Fairbanks are leaving, and one of the things they're saying is not just the energy cost, but the quality of the air is significant. So I think, you know, delaying anything would be, I mean, real difficult for me if the division feels like it's moving quickly on the current regulations. And does this impact at all the state implementation plan, or how would it impact the state implementation plan if that were done at a later time for Fairbanks?
Through the chair, Representative Kawasaki. So that's one of the things that we are looking at with this bill, is to determine how it will impact the state implementation plan, the parts that are already in place, as well as the future plan for the Fairbanks North Star Borough. Clearly, we're trying to find solutions and make emission reductions in the Fairbanks North Star Borough non-attainment area as expeditiously as we can, and looking at those tools. So it is important that we take that into context when we're reviewing this bill.
And then I have one more question. Just one more question, Mr. Chair. Thank you. The 351 micrograms per cubic meter of air, is that exactly what is in regulation right now? Because that's now I'm getting it.
So
okay, sir.
Through the chair, Representative Kawasaki, that was the proposal in the existing air quality regulations. There's a section that deals with emergency types of episodes, and we set for most pollutants, we've set three different levels of standards: an episode, a warning, and an emergency. And the 351 micrograms per cubic meter at a 24-hour average was the proposal that we had for the highest level for new levels for fine particulate matter. So those have not yet been adopted.
I just wanted to direct the members' attention to the air quality index and just what 351 micrograms per cubic meter in a 24-hour period are. It's everyone should avoid physical activity outdoors. People with heart and lung disease, older adults, children should remain indoors, keep activity levels very low. I guess just from a – I just wanted to – and I know the regulations are still being drafted, so I guess has there been a thought from the state to make them higher standards than currently proposed, or is that the proposal that stands and you're still working on public testimony?
Through the chairperson, Kawasaki, we are looking at all the comments we received on that proposal. But you're right, it does tie back to the air quality index and the, you know, the first level of episode that we had proposed of the three was at 56, which was when it was unhealthy for all individuals. Okay. And then we had an intermediate step, and then we had a higher level for the emergency.
Great. Thank you.
I got a final question. We're going to wrap up on this. And just what's the timeline for the delivery of those regulations that we're referring to?
Mr. Chair, we just closed the comment period on those regulations, I believe, at the towards the end of January, and we have hundreds and hundreds of comments that we're going through, so we are going to be working to move through those relatively quickly, but we are having to look at a lot of information that we've received, so we're looking at the next couple of months to try and work through those comments, work with the commissioner and the administration to bring forward a final package.
Good deal. Thank you very much. Question, Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. Wilson.
The regulations that you're all talking about, I know that this makes a difference for the town of Fairbanks, and but you are concerned about the actual health of the people in Fairbanks, and I know that there's kind of two different angles to look at this, but I mean, I wouldn't want my children to be. I would want to be warned when they reach a certain area if I was living there, so that I could make sure that my children were maybe watching educational program or something like that instead of running around if their health is in jeopardy. And so my question is the town of Fairbanks wanting to change what you've put into place so that they don't have to close down as soon?
I'm not, through the chair, I'm not sure I completely understand the question in the context of, we do call air quality advisories in Fairbanks now.
Yeah, and I knew that.
And we'll continue to be doing so. The setting of the episode levels formalizes concentrations for fine particulate matter, which we haven't had in regulation to this point. So it's new, but it is a statewide proposal. That would then also factor into the situation in Fairbanks.
And the proposed regulations, were the majority of the people calling because they didn't want that to be in place or because they did want it to be in place?
Through the chair, the episode levels are levels that we need, are federally required to actually establish, and that was one of the reasons why they've been brought forward. But we've gotten a lot of comments on what from people in the community about what those levels should be, and that's what we're still evaluating. I'm not sure I'm answering your question.
No, maybe I just don't understand.
Recast the question or think about it? Or?
I guess I'll just think about it.
And I'd be happy to follow up it additionally if needed.
Okay.
One more, I kind of want to wrap it up, so Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Excuse me, just to continue on with Representative Wilson's question there. Have you had an opportunity to see among these many, many comments that you've received if more of them are leaning towards approval of the regulations as drafted or whether they wanted something more strict or more lenient? That's what I was kind of following your question to be, and maybe it's too premature to know.
Through the chair, Representative Tarr, we are still looking at all of them, but we certainly have comments on both sides of the issue. So we are seeing comments that go in both directions in that respect.
Thank you.
Ms. Edwards, thank you very much. I appreciate you and the sponsor coming forward. Obviously, there's some work being done by the sponsor, so we're going to hold this bill over at the sponsor's request, and Telegraph will probably hope to have public testimony on this bill, which seems to be of intense interest at our the next time we bring it up. So thank you very much. While you're here, however, we're going to turn to the next bill on our schedule, which is House Bill 268, Big Bull Moose Derbies, and potentially end ice classics. So we have a CS in front of us. That version being version N for November. Can I get a motion to adopt the CS as our working document?
I'll second that.
Representative Seaton, thank you. Any objection?
Can I ask a question on what changed?
We can get through it after we adopt it. So no objection. Version N, the CS for HB 268 is before us. And Representative Tammy Wilson is before us. If you could speak to the changes, maybe in the way and the process, answer the questions.
Again, for the record, my name is Representative Tammy Wilson. I still represent District 2, Fairbanks, North Pole. This is a fun bill. We actually have those.
It's all fun.
This is an act establishing a Big Bull Moose Derby and now an ice classic as an authorized form of the charitable gaming. House Bill 268 would allow the Tannenaw Valley Sportsmen Association to raise funds for their organization and the University of Fairbanks Nanook Rifle Team equally. The Big Bull Moose Derby would be operated much like other contests already allowed under statute. This will take place during the annual moose season by individuals that have acquired all the proper documentation already implemented by the state of Alaska to stay within the legal boundaries of the moose season. Participants must purchase a derby ticket prior to the open day of the season. The winner would be determined based on the bull antlers, the widest spread legally taken, and would receive a predetermined portion of the net proceeds from the fundraiser. Anyone who enters a bull would, regardless of the antler spread, be entered into a drawing for prizes. The Tannenaw Valley Sportsman Association is a nonprofit organization that hosts training and completion events for the nationally ranked University of Alaska Rifle Team, as well as the local high schools. It is home to a multitude of community and school events, NCAA tournaments, biathlon training and competition, gun safety and personal protection classes are among the many. House Bill 268 would allow the raising of funds to further the use of the TVSA clubhouse, who a few years ago had a fire, and support the efforts of the nationally ranked UAF rifle team, who has produced Olympic-level competitors. And on the phone, we have Mr. Grant Lewis, Mr. Mike Tinker, and Mr. Dan Jordan to speak on those.
We also, as you've seen in the other, we now have an ice classic that has joined it, and it's to be administered by the Advocates for the Victims of Violence. And I don't have all the facts on that particular one, but I'm sure somebody could share that.
Okay, sure.
So you're aware that we have these different salmon derbies, halibut derbies, but for communities to be able to do that, they have to go through statute to do that. As we see our capital budgets going down, I've always told my group that if you have ideas to be able to do fundraising, I would be absolutely behind it, and that's what brought this one forward. So with that, Mr. Chair, any questions people may have?
Thank you very much, Representative Wilson. Questions, Representative Seaton, Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So have this Big Bull Moose contest been going on before statehood?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, no, they wouldn't have to. This would be new, that no one has done it at all. This is what they're asking to do.
Mr. Chairman, on page 3 of the end version, we have this listed under those sections, which started on line 19, or 18, an activity may not be licensed under this chapter unless it existed in the state substantially in the same form and was conducted in substantially the same manner before January 1, 1959. So my question is, do we have this in the right section of the regulations where you wanted it? So anyway, I'm raising that, Mr. Chairman, because I'm not sure. If it didn't exist before, then I think we'd have a problem with the way the statute's there.
Fair question on the close reading. Representative Wilson?
Through the chair, I'm not an attorney, but it looks like you might have got help from your next door neighbor there.
Thank you. And Mr. Chairman, it's maybe with there's an exception at the first. With the exception of these, it can't be conducted. So maybe it's okay.
I think so.
Just trying to figure out where we are.
For those who get paid more than we do.
My suspicion, I think my reading of it is your interpretation is correct. I think the bill drafters understand that stuff. So. Did you have a question, Representative Tarr?
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to understand in terms of the mechanism here, because these individuals would still need to apply for a permit through the traditional way that we have established, and so it wouldn't impact, the numbers in any way in terms of the overall harvest. It's just like any other classic where an individual chooses to say, well, within what I might catch with my permit, I want to enter it into this contest.
Representative Tarr, through the chair, absolutely. It would be easy. I'm going to go hunting anyway, and look, I could have make a little bit of money, mm-hmm. Or win a prize, and therefore I'm going to be part of that. No more permits would be given because of this.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
And if I might add, I think sportsmen and hunters tend to be very big-hearted and do want to support the civic activities, and certainly tend to sportsmen's was a good activity, so I think you'll see a lot of good-hearted people buy the derby tickets that should have become law.
Representative
Kawasaki, my apologies.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The question I have is that in the sponsor statement it mentions TVSA and the shooters up on campus, but it doesn't actually say in the bill that they're the specific permittee. And I guess what happens in the case where somebody else wants to be the permittee instead of those two organizations?
Representative Kawasaki, through the chair, what an excellent question. Absolutely anybody can take advantage of it. In fact, if you didn't want it to be a big bull moose derby and you just wanted to be a moose derby so that they could do it with other contests could be done and not be so specified, then you could do that. But absolutely, if you have, even on the Ice Classic that's now been added, this is... My bill was exclusively to help these groups, and that's how they anticipate using it. But if somebody in another part of the state wanted to have a different type, they would be able to.
I had a question about the bill change.
Before you go there, kind of to this topic, I got a question on that topic, and then Representative Hawker, and then we'll get back to a different topic. Representative Wilson, this is specifically and repeatedly identified as a big bull moose derby, but in the existing language there is no big king salmon, no big king salmon. Why the necessity of that modifier, the word big?
Mr. Chair, that's because the rifle team liked the name. I brought the name forward because I did not realize at the time that anybody could use it, and so they were literally, this is kind of how they were going to promote it, and that's where the name came from. And again, if somebody wanted to put a friendly amendment and
take that word out or just make it a moose. I hear there'd be a, you know, bill sponsor that would be absolutely okay with that.
On that subject.
Free-floating conversation, Representative Johnson, to that same subject.
If they were to have a party and it was the Bull Moose Party, it could be confused with Teddy Roosevelt. The big Bull Moose Party would not. So I don't want to confuse this with Teddy Roosevelt. So I like the big
but
Bull Moose.
They would not be confused for long.
Right.
He'd be dead for 100 years.
Thank good you, deal. Representative Johnson.
And Representative Hawker to this point?
Yeah. No, sir.
Okay. That's good. Representative Hawker, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just I guess, a bit of a nit more for the chair than for the sponsor. Okay. Great bill. Fine. Sign me up. No problem.
Thank you.
Looking at the title, however, we're real an act relating to Big Bull Moose Derbies. Sounds good. And Ice Classics is a rather open title. You all might want to think about tightening that down a little bit.
Hmm. Could you elaborate on that?
You know, anything that would allow, just saying Ice Classics means that, you know, we've got a lot of Ice Classics. You could put insert anything in this bill that could affect any one of these other functioning Ice Classics rather than have it be as the bill intends to be, specific authority for the Snowtown Ice Classic being operated and administered by the Victims of Violence Incorporated. And again, and in that it's, you know, if deal with the, our good folks over at Legal, but we are really... I don't know that we really want to open up a vehicle for, I've been through this before, you know, particularly as it starts moving down the process and everybody gets their ornament they want to hang on it or dealing with the world of Ice Classics, you might want to consider tightening it up so that Representative Wilson's bill remains what she wants to see it being, efficient, effective, and quite Spartan as it's written.
Thank you for that. You may have that opportunity to do that tightening up.
Mr. Chair, you also have that at your advantage.
Respectfully, Mr. Chair, if you'd intended to move the bill here, there's no, it just, it's a comment. It can be picked up any time along the way before it gets to the floor.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. If you have an amendment you'd want to pitch in, we'd probably hear a little bit. We would withdraw it. Thank you. Representative Kawasaki, then Feige.
Just a clarifying question on the part that was added, the Snowtown Ice Classic. What is the Snowtown Ice Classic, and what is that organization?
Through the chair, Representative Kawasaki, I'm going to use my help from a friend on this one, please.
Lifeline.
Mr. Chair, if that would be okay with you, I believe Representative Feige might be able to help a little.
Representative Feige.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And as far as Representative Hawker's point, I agree wholeheartedly. No need to leave an opening for nefarious purposes on the future manipulation of a bill or amendment to a bill. To the sponsor, and I've now officially signed up as a co-sponsor on this bill. I thank you for adding the Snowtown Ice Classic language. That is, Snowtown Ice Classic is in Valdez, and Advocates for Victims of Violence is a local charity in Valdez that is looking to broaden their revenue base to other sources besides the state of Alaska. So thank you very much.
And Mr. Chair, just so you know, they are on the line to answer any further questions.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. At this point, I'm going to take a brief time out and discuss the issue, and we'll come back in just a quick second. So at 4 minutes after 2, at ease. Six, maybe seven after 2 o'clock. I think we might end up holding this over and have it only a couple days and give the sponsor the opportunity to tighten that up and make sure to avoid the possible challenges that our member to the left has raised. I should ask, are there other questions for the sponsor? Or we do have several folks who do want to testify on this. So, other questions?
One brief question.
Representative Kawasaki, question
for Representative
Wilson.
I was wondering if you did any research on the idea that if you incentivize a derby or a classic like this, that there will be more hunters or that there will be more moose taken in an attempt to try and basically make money off a particular situation. I don't know if that's how, if there's any sort of study that correlates those two, but in an open unit versus a unit that needs permits, I wonder if that might be the case or if you've done any research on that.
Representative Kelly, let's talk it through the chair. I have not done any official surveys or anything. My understanding of hunters is that they love to hunt, and there's always all the permits taken up as it is right now. We're not increasing it whatsoever on the number of permits that will be out there for hunters to do. And so to think that this would, it might make it more competitive. You know, more people may try to hunt because of it. But as far as how many permits are out there, that number doesn't change. And from my understanding, they are pretty much every year all taken anyway. So there wouldn't be additional ways of being able to hunt than through the process there is currently.
And a follow-up question on that. The follow-up question is just how would that work for federal subsistence areas and subsistence areas where you need a tier?
Representative Kawasaki, through the chair, I will make sure I pose it to Fish and Game, but my understanding what this bill does is that whatever you must do now to legally hunt for a moose, you must still do underneath this bill. All this would do would allow them, if they wanted to buy a derby, because you can, my understanding, you could do subsistence when it comes to fishing as well. And so if they're underneath the guidelines of what it takes to participate in this, it doesn't matter how they got their permit. It would be that it's a legal permit that has been done by Fish and Game.
Okay. Thanks.
Thanks. Representative Seaton.
Thank you. I'm hearing this being a bill that requires people to go hunt. Most of the classics, whether it's Ice Classic, Mercury Classic, people are guessing based upon what the size of the biggest bull moose is this year, and it's more a game of chance. Is your intention to allow either of those two to go forward so that people can guess what's the biggest mm-hmm. moose caught or taken this year in Unit 15 or something like that?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, I may have to have a friend that left. Oh, I don't know where he went. Oh, well. Okay. Revenue might be able to answer, but it's my understanding that how they set these up all has to go through the Department of Revenue, which they have guidelines. So if they were wanting to say, you know, in this area, whoever has the biggest one, and actually that would probably raise more revenue for them because it wouldn't be just the hunters at that point. It would allow others to do in it, but that would be in the parameters of how they did their gaming and how they did it with revenue. It might be a great suggestion for the club to realize that where you have just the hunters right now, kind of like if you're just going to do the halibut derby, it's only those who go out there and catch the fish. If you had people who were going to guess for the day what the biggest one coming in would be, would really open it up to even more types of tickets. But mm-hmm. although we put in here what their intent was, my understanding is it will be through revenue that they will have to do the checks. And I do my understanding that they are here.
Yeah. With that, I wouldn't mind bringing up representative from the Department of Revenue to ask a couple of these kinds of questions. So, Ms. Kim?
Works for me. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. Anna Kim, Department of Revenue Tax Division.
Great. Very good. Well, my first question to you, Ms. Kim, would be, is there a technical distinction between what a classic is and what a derby is?
I don't think I can answer that fully, but to talk about the difference between games of chance versus games of skill, we have actual definitions for those when we're reviewing things.
Why don't you run through those just for get it out of the record, though?
I think I'm going to have to get back to you on that. I didn't bring packet with me.
But there's no distinction that a derby is a taking a chance on what the
yes.
biggest someone else does, and a classic is what you... Can you give me at least that much of specificity?
I think your assumption is correct.
Okay. Questions for the department? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And my understanding is a game of skill doesn't necessarily require permits to have the gaming aspect to it as much as games of chance. I have trouble calling hunting moose a game of chance. I think there's an awful lot of skill involved, so I'm not sure that we don't want to merge the two. I mean, if it's drawing a permit to have a chance to get a moose, then I could see chance, and I can take prize consideration and chance
three elements.
The qualifier for being a gaming
permit situation. So I just want to make sure that we're not, you know, it's not chance that you get a moose. I mean, there's a great amount of skill involved. So do we even need this, I guess, is a question.
Through the chair, I believe there's, Representative Johnson, there's some past history that I haven't been briefed on as far as this particular activity related to skill or chance. But my understanding shortly before I came over here, in order for this to move forward, it would have to be a chance.
And I guess my question is, do we need your approval to pay the biggest, split the pot with the biggest moose because it is a chance? And is this even necessary?
Mm-hmm. I would have to get back to you on that specific answer. I do not know the answer to that question right now.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the Ice Classic is not an issue. I understand that. But and if you're guessing the length of the antlers, that's a different issue. But just to go out and take the biggest moose, to me, that's a skill set. That's not chance. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Good deal. Other questions for the Department of Revenue? Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just am looking over the list and noticing that it's a growing list of things that we're allowing to be done as fundraising activities. I'm just curious, at what point or how much administrative support does it take to oversee something like this, just for general understandings in the context of thinking about as we add more to that, what does that mean for the workload of the folks who administer these programs?
Through the chair, Representative Tarr, so far activities that have been added in the past have been absorbed by our existing folks that are part of our gaming group.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions? If not, thank you, Ms. Kim. I should remind the members that we do have other folks available to answer our questions online. We have the president of Tantalap Valley Sportsmen's Association, a member, Mr. Michael Tinker, is a member of TVSA. I'm sorry, Grant Lewis is the president. Also have Mr. Dan Jordan, the coach of the UF rifle team, and two other folks, Rowena Palomar, who have advocates for victims of violence, and Daryl Verfaile of Valdez Parks and Rec. I don't know if anyone has questions for any of those folks. Okay. At that point, any other questions for the sponsor? No? Good deal. At this point, then, I guess I would like to open up to a public hearing. Is there anybody in person who would like to testify on House Bill 268? Seeing none, do we have anybody on teleconference who would like to testify on this bill? I think Al Barrett.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, House Resources Committee members. I would favor to sponsor this new language and this new statute. I think it's a good idea. I think any time that clubs or organizations have an opportunity to raise money, and especially for, like, the sponsor's statement in this one, is to benefit the TVSA, our college rifle team. It lessens the burden on the legislature budget or the state budget to have this the rifle team be competitive at a collegiate level, and I think they've been really responsible and done a good job in the past. I think that maybe clarify something about skilled hunting versus chance hunting. I think you know, it takes skill to hunt an animal, but it's by chance if you can successfully get the largest moose for that derby. So I would encourage you guys to support this and move it on. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barrett. I appreciate you testifying on the bill. Anybody else online who would like to testify? Mm-hmm. Okay. As we might be seeing a couple changes, we're going to hold public testimony open, and I think we're going to, I'm sorry, anybody else online? I think we have motion in that regard. Good deal. I'm sorry, Mr. George Pierce from Kasilov. Can you hear me, sir?
Yes, sir.
Great. If you could just identify yourself and any affiliation for the record and give us your testimony.
No, my affiliation is myself. I live at Kasilov, Alaska. My name is George Pierce. About this big game derby, this is not a good idea. It's all it is a scam to take the bull moose, which, if you know, if you've lived in Alaska, There's problems with our moose population all over this state, and to have a derby where it's going to be, no doubt, non-residents coming up here and killing our moose, which we can't even harvest ourselves in a lot of these locations. And if you look at the other things that are harvested, like the king salmon, for an example, down here on the peninsula, there's one group, special interest group, that targets all those fish. Now look at the king salmon population. There is no more big king salmon, thanks to that group. Now you've got another special interest group that wants to come on board and take our resources so they can make some money on their own to have fundraisers. These are my resources, and I don't want them outsourced and sold for money because somebody wants to make some money. So step up for the Alaskans and turn this bill down. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Pierce. I appreciate your testimony. Thank you. Gotcha.
Yep.
Good deal. Anybody else come in who wants to testify online or by teleconference?
Chair Sadler, we have three participants in Fairbanks.
Three people who just want to testify or they want to listen?
Yes, sir. They're ready to participate.
Great. Line them up and number one, go first. Please give us your name and know who you're representing and testify, please.
My name is Dan Jordan. I'm the head rifle coach at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. I live here in Fairbanks at 852 Cessna.
Very good.
Actually, it was about 9 years ago now when I took over the rifle program. We started looking at ways to cut costs. Obviously, the whole department and the whole university system has. And so we've been looking at that over the years and looking at ways to increase revenue to take that burden and that strain off of the university. One of the ideas that we had was bringing forth this big bull derby idea after looking at the success of the halibut derbies, the ice classics, the salmon derbies, and looking at all the big buck contests that are so popular down in the lower 48. We thought it might just be a good idea to kind of formalize what has been going on informally here in Fairbanks for a long, long time through the 60-inch club and the newspaper and other things like that. And so started to look at the options of that and bringing in a group like Tanaw Valley Sportsmen's Association, who is already involved with youth shooting, youth activities, and actively involved with animals, animal management within the state. And, you know, the hunters are already out there. They're already looking for an opportunity to go hunting, and I don't think it's going to increase the number of hunters. It just gives us a chance to, you know, kind of bring those people in, give some recognition and some notoriety to those people that are already harvesting moose, and give us a chance to make some money, which is going to go to benefit the youth, the college shooters, the community. The more funding we have from outside of the university, the more things that we can do to support those things. And so I think it'd be a great opportunity for us and for the community to see something like this happen.
Thank you, Mr. Jordan. I appreciate that. Any questions for Dan Jordan, Representative Tarr?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just wondering, Mr. Jordan, if you would support a policy that said only Alaska residents would be allowed to participate in this derby.
I don't know. I'd have to think through that a little bit. I can't say if I'd be for or against that at this time.
You can't do that.
More questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Jordan. Mr. Lewis or Mr. Tinker up next?
Yeah, my name is Grant Lewis. I'm the president of the Tanaw Valley Sportsmen's Association. I live at 6101 China Hot Springs Road here in Fairbanks. A little bit of background on TVSA itself. We have documentation tracing the roots of our club clear back to 1911 in Fairbanks. We've been incorporated for like 76 years now. We incorporated as a club in 1937. Recently, last 20 years or so that I've been involved with it, the focus of TVSA has been on youth firearms education. We have our own youth shooting club. We train about 75 kids a year on an average in safe handling of firearms. We also sponsor the high schools, but we have junior highs, we have charter schools, in addition to the high schools and helping with the university. One thing I wanted to mention is our junior club last year started a senior division, and they, for the first year of competition, ended up being the national champions in their class. Also want to mention that this would be conducted under TVSA's existing gaming permit, and obviously TVSA is in favor of it. We would get operating money that we wouldn't have to try to raise elsewhere or come to the state asking for at some point in the future. And also, we always like to support the national championship University of Alaska rifle team. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lewis. Any questions for Mr. Lewis? Hearing none, Mr. Tinker, you're on deck next.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mike Tinker. I live at 478 Alpha Way in Esther, Alaska, just on the edge of Fairbanks here. I am a life member of the Tanana Valley Sportsman Association, and also have a lot of long affiliation with the university's rifle team. Coach Jordan was a little bashful about saying that he's working very hard this year to win his 11th national championship in that arena, and we're trying to help him in any way we can to go there. What I would like to just take a minute to do is to talk to you about the relative numbers in this thing, and I know there are some people worried about it. I have 25 years or so working with the advisory committee here in Fairbanks and the Board of Game. In all of the research I am aware of over all of those years, hunters in the field hunting moose or caribou will always seek the biggest one they can find. Now, there are a few individuals that will take the very first moose, and those are the ones that are totally concerned about just filling the freezer. But given a choice, hunters go after the larger animals. So we're really not promoting anything here that should cause a big shift in hunting numbers. It would be nice if for the whole state program, if we could subscribe a few hunters to actually go out and begin moose hunting, but that isn't likely to happen. Using an example of like a $10 fee on this and selling as few as 1,500 tickets and giving away a substantial prize, we could still get into the university's program maybe in the neighborhood of $7,000 to $10,000. Doesn't sound really significant, but for a crack in the door and getting started, it would be very significant to the program in terms of equipment and support and whatnot for his team. And so always there is some skepticism of how well this would be received, but we think we can make it work and that people will add on in years to come, and we can grow the prize and grow the level of support. So that's why we're here today, is to ask you to consider adding this in. We want to get people to buy a ticket. We anticipate having some weekly winners by drawing through the about four-week moose season that this would consist of, probably last week August through third week September. We have not come up with an absolute scoring mechanism yet, but we will try to accommodate even those who, by regulation, the state of Alaska, are required to what we call destroy the antlers, and destroy means cutting the skull cap in half, which does complicate the overall width measurement. And we would try to encourage people to, we would have a couple of check stations they could bring antlers to in Fairbanks for scoring eligibility in the contest. So we think we have enough of the basics to make it work. We just need your help in adding it in so we can get started. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Tinker. Good deal. Any questions? No questions. Great. I would like to go to an off-net site. We have Rowena Palomar, if I'm pronouncing that correct. If you can hear me, Rowena, can you give us your name and affiliation and give us any testimony you have?
Yes, thank you very much. My name is Rowena Palomar, for the records, and I am the Executive Director for Advocates for Victims of Violence. Advocates for Victims of Violence is one of the 20 programs that provide services to victims of domestic violence and sexual assault. For FY 13 to 14, our basic operating costs have risen over $20,000, with increased transportation for victims in villages, shelter, utility, and energy costs and insurance costs. At the current state funding level, we would need an additional $25,000 to continue to meet victims' basic needs. Unfortunately, the current proposed increment in the state funding of about $285,000 will be divided by 20 programs in the state, and AVV would still need to make up the difference or be forced to cut services. We hope that by being eligible to receive funding from the Snow Classic, we can use this money as emergency funding to meet the projected shortfall rather than making the difficult decision of what services will need to be cut and having not turning victims away. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Palomar. Any questions for her? Your question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Rowena, once again, I think you did a great job of explaining, you know, exactly how useful this will be to you, and glad to give you a hand in getting this into law. So, good job representing your folks there at AVV.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is Daryl up next in Valdez?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Daryl Verfai. I'm the Director of Parks, Recreation, and Cultural Services for the City of Valdez, and I'm calling in partnership with Advocates for Victims of Violence to promote the addition of the Ice Classic in Valdez. From a city perspective, we were looking for an event that would provide both residents and visitors with additional winter entertainment in an area where, as you know, winter goes on and on and on. And so we would hope that the event would promote our annual week-long Frosty Fever Winter Celebration, which is a citywide event in conjunction with the local radio station, and hope to potentially expand winter tourism while encouraging folks from perhaps Copper Center and Glen Allen to benefit from that week-long activity as well. And then certainly strengthen partnerships between the City of Valdez and Advocates for Victims of Violence. And I think it's important to emphasize that the City of Valdez would not receive any revenues from the event. We would simply coordinate the event on behalf of AVV, assist the event advertising, provide monitoring of the site, again on behalf of AVV, thereby maximizing nonprofit revenues while bolstering Parks and Rec's winter offerings. So thank you.
Good deal. Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Verfai?
Verfai, yes, thank you.
Ça ne fait rien. Hearing none, thank you very much. I understand we also have someone on the line from DOR, Mr. Joe Koss, who may be able to answer the questions that Representative Johnson and I had about Derbies and Classics. So, Mr. Koss, are you online?
I am.
Good deal. Representative Johnson, you want to re-ask that question? Or?
I'm not sure.
I guess the question is, thank you, Mr. Chairman, the question is on, you know, prize consideration, chance, and skills. Does this really fall into, and we heard one person's opinion, does this really fall into chance?
Yes, sir, it does.
And can you explain that? Can you help me understand why?
I can. First off, the full title of our statute, AS 515, is Games of Chance and Skill. And while hunting is an exercise in skill, there's still an element of chance. You might never see anything. You might miss, whatever. The proposed activity definitely comes under our purview or under our statute.
Good enough for me, Mr.
On this point.
I'm the Representative Hawker.
Yeah, hey, Joe, it's good to hear from you again. It's been way too long.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, yeah.
You?
And from your perspective, I'm sure it's never long enough. but I remember debates we've had on various bills as well. And, I mean, there was an argument going around that since poker is such a game of skill, it ought to be exempt from these statutes. And, in fact, it might not be subject to regulation under these statutes, which, I mean, I think is absurd. But it illustrates the point that Joe is bringing up here in response to the question about the relationship between skills, games of skill and chance, and the intent of this sort of activity. So, again, Joe, thanks. Good to hear from you again. That's what I really wanted to do was just say hi.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Thank you.
All right. I'm wondering who wins these games you play. Mr. Koss, I do have a technical question. The terms Derby and Classic are used not quite interchangeably, but variously in this bill or in the current statute. Can you clarify what the legal status of the definition of Derby versus Classic is?
Well, to a degree, the Classics, as mentioned earlier, do tend to be based on guessing games, guessing when the ice goes out, guessing the depth of the snow, guessing how many fish pass a certain point. The derbies, and primarily we're looking at a fish derby as the equivalent, are looking at catching the largest fish. And in this instance, we're looking at the largest set of antlers. So derby definitely fits the proposed activity.
So, but there's no real distinction between the two terms?
Not as far as distinct definition goes, no, sir.
Fair enough. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And on that point, I guess I had missed on the final section on page 4 is actually defining this as harvesting a bull moose based on the size or spread of the antlers. So it eliminates the classic, which is guessing which ones would be available. So I didn't wanted to correct that question that I had offered earlier. I'm not sure that they're right, that they'll be able to gain more by a few hunters than people guessing the size of the largest bull caught this year, but that's the choice that's being made here in the bill. So thank you.
Thank you. And I guess, Mr. Koss, I'll ask you one more question. On page 2 of this bill, line 29, it cites existing statute in Title 5, Chapter 15. It says the department may issue a permit to a qualified organization. What are the criterion does an organization have to meet, and what are the stipulations of a permit?
It has to be not-for-profit. It must have at least 25 Alaska Residences members and must be at least 3 years old. These come in to the definition of qualifying organization.
Not-for-profit, 3 years old or more, and what else?
Must be at least 3 years and have at least 25 Alaska residents as members.
Good deal. Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Any other questions for Mr. Koss or anybody from the Department of Revenue? Nope. Okay. Any questions for anybody who we had on testimony, public testimony? Great. My intention is to hold public testimony open until next time we have the meeting, and we're going to hold the bill until the sponsor comes back with a slightly revised version. Thank you. Okay. Up next, we have... Thank you very much, Representative Wilson. Up next, we have House Bill 244. Extending the Citizens Advisory Commission on Federal Management Areas in Alaska. Do we have somebody from the sponsor's office here to present? Or do we... Oh. We'll take a brief at ease. Bill 244, we have been joined by Representative Wes Keller. Sir, if you would introduce yourself to the record and present on your bill.
Thank you, and thank you, committee, to hear the bill. For the record, I'm Wes Keller. I represent House District 10, which is the Susitna River drainage from northwest Wasilla up to the Bata Park. I'm here with 244, which extends the sunset date on the CACFA, the Citizens Advisory Commission on Federal Areas, to 2021. As you all know very well, the Alaska Constitution talks about us providing, legislators providing for the use and the conservation and the development of our natural resources to the maximum benefit of the people. That implies, obviously, some rights that the Alaskans have, and these rights are not inherent like some rights, but they are defined by like the Statehood Compact and federal laws like ANCSA, the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, and ANILCA. I know you're very well aware. Case law that happens regularly, and unfortunately regulations that are ongoing. So CACFA exists to help Alaskans maintain the rights that we've been given. You all have ahead of you the annual report that is just pretty much hot off the press, I think yesterday. I'm not going to walk you through it. I know many of you, most of you, are well aware, and I would hate to take that kind of time, but I would just point out on the first page, it just talks about the topics that we deal with at the bottom of the first paragraph: access, stand holdings, mineral development, subsistence management, wilderness management, use of cabins, guiding for hunting and fishing, transporting services, and then it goes on and talks about the proposed federal laws that come up and regulations, and of course our the regulatory changes that happen, and endangered species things, all that affect us profoundly. We deal with the national or the federal agencies, the National Park Service, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Forestry, BLM, Secretary of Interior, that kind of thing. In addition to the annual report, I'm not going to go through the whole annual report. My intent is just to give you a snapshot of why I think it's a worthy thing to do to extend the date here. But I will, a little bit later, I plan to talk a little bit about the executive director and about the commissioner, just to give you an idea who's there. But I just want to point out that in addition to our regular meetings there in the bottom paragraph, we had a summit this summer, August in August 12-13. I'm going to read the purpose of the summit. But just keep in mind that you're talking a volunteer commission. They spend hours working on this, and I'm very proud of the product that they put out. We had, on short notice, we had a couple hundred people participate, including the governor, Senator Murkowski, Senator Begich, Representative Young, and many people that have had a long history in Alaska on these issues. The purpose of the summit, if you look at it there, we carefully worded it, gather major participants, and I'm not going to read it, but it gathered participants to document the areas that they saw that where the federal government seemed to be overreaching in stepping on the authority and the management responsibilities of the state. Like I say, the response was overwhelming, and we asked each presenter when they came to step forward, not only with whining about the feds, but also to offer a proposal. So what we did is we came up with a document that is included here at the end of our annual report that gives you all the recommendations that were brought forward in that summit. And we're not done. We'll take that long list. And by the way, every word is online. If you go to CACFA, you'll see it. And we're not done with that list. We're going to make a presentation later on to the legislature. I have them posted in Judiciary, and I will keep you up to date on that. But just kind of highlight the recommendations that came forward that were significant to us. I just want to point out why I believe that the commission is really a strong commission. We have a really high quality executive director, Stan Liefart. He's online, or at least I believe he's online. I cannot say enough positive things about Stan. He is an asset to our commission, but he's also an asset to our state. Here's a picture, just show and tell a little bit. This is the Federal Register. Supposedly, every regulation that comes out by the feds, they put it in this Federal Register. I know you're all aware of it. This is in last year, how many of them there were. He sorts through these things, and he finds, areas where there is a concern, and he calls it to our attention, and that's only part of it. not all the changes in what I call abuses are brought up in the Federal Register. But one of them is the U.S. Park Service. Comes up every year with a compendium that gets a plan, regulation changes. He found this is not a regulation change, so it wasn't in the Federal Register. But he found where the compendium was actually overriding our fish and game management policies by closing areas that the state fish and game had chosen, without talking to our fish and game, had chosen not to close. And they were doing it, I'm not saying it might have been the right thing to do, but they were doing it completely unilaterally without publishing in the Federal Register. And this is the kind of thing that Stan catches as he works there. He keeps an eye on USPS. He keeps a good relationship with them. They come in and talk to us. Some of you may know Joel Hard. He's the head of U.S. Parks Service, a long-time Alaskan. He called in here at this last meeting. We had a long dialogue and interaction. So is the keeping, he keeps a relationship there, and he drafts letters for us, Stan does, you know, when there's something that needs to be done, we need to address the U.S. Park Service or whatever, he'll draft those, and he keeps them track. He's a good guy. He's top of the line, and one, he keeps track. He works with DNR and the other units of DNR, like the NILCA division, and of course, you know, the pad on navigability in RS-2477. I don't want to tell you what you already know, but I want to put those things on the record. We have a top-of-the-line CEO in CACPA, and we really got to deal with him. And his staff is Carrie Importe. She's a very, very capable, keeps us everything straight. As you look through the annual report, and if you go online, look at the our website, that kind of thing, you can see the quality that we got there. Also, though, we also on the commission, part of what makes it strong is the kind of commissioners we've got. And I'm going to go through them real quick. I won't take a long time, but just a little bit about each one, because I think most of you know most of these guys. They're good guys. Rob Arnold, he's the current president of AOC. He's been on the commission since 2007. He's a guide outfitter. He worked for the Professional Hunter Association from 91 to 2003, so he's a long history there. We have Senator Coghill, you know, he's got a little bit of history here. third generation Alaska. He's passionate on these issues, very very much an asset. Mark Fish is on there. He's a third-year Alaskan. We got Teresa Hansen, our newest member. She's a PhD and interested in Native issues, language preservation, that kind of thing. She's just getting started, and obviously lots of energy, very bright lady. We have Charlie Lean from Nome. He's a fisheries biologist, 20 years experience in the state dealing with issues related to fish biology. He's worked with the National Park Service on these issues. We've got Mike Meekin. He's a transporter and air service operator out of Sheep Mountain area. He joined us in 2010, and his understanding of the issues related to transporting game and people into areas that for access has been invaluable. Kathleen Liska, her grandmother was Mrs. Irene Ryan, state senator from the past, so long history again in the state. She's really passionate about these issues. He's been helping a lot with us in outreach, you know, in communication. We got Warren Olson. He's he got here 6 months before we became the state, and he's been in these issues ever since. You know, most of you probably know him and what he's done, but one of the things he did is he raised a lot of the funds to form the Alaska Constitutional Legal Defense Conservation Fund. Ron Somerville, I believe he may be in the packet.
Uh-huh.
He was. Yeah, he's here. I think most of you know him. He has a graduate degree in wildlife management. He served in Fish and Game for 24 years. He worked with Governor Hammond. We got Susan Smith. She's a 17-year in-holder in the Wrangell-St. Lawrence National Park. So she has a handle on the in-holder issues, you know, that happen, and she's just invaluable. We have Frank Woods. He's a traditional hunter. Fisherman, commercial fisherman from Billingham, and he is a huge asset. He's got 10 kids, but he's worked a lot with, I can give you a list here, if I can say it. Kwiyasik Walrus Commission, the Bristol Bay Marine Mammal Council, the Native American Fish and Wildlife Society, Dillingham Village Native Corporation, and the Alaska State Winter Trail Conference. So, anyway, I know you have important things to do. I would assume that you will take this under your consideration, and in that process, please look over the annual report, and also that summary in the back done by Tina Cunning on all the things that came out in the annual summit is very, very comprehensive and good reading. So it's a good review of these issues just to go through that. So with that, is there any questions?
Thank you. We do have a question. Representative Hawker had a question.
Thank you. And then Chair, I did just want to take the opportunity to thank yourself and the folks that put the time into this summer, because I quite sincerely, in my tenure in the legislature, this is really one of the more thorough and best documented reports to the legislature from activities we've authorized that I think I'm personally familiar with. It's really something I appreciate, really the sincerity and the effort you all put into this.
Thank you, Representative.
But I, you know, did have a question out of it, and it's really hard sitting in your chair to try to say, well, this is why you should do this, this is why you should do this, this is why we want to reauthorize it, because you did, frankly, the work stands on its own. Honest question. Are there any problems with the way the commission is functioning, or is there any reason why we should be really concerned about reauthorizing? Any reasons why we shouldn't reauthorize it?
Representative Hawke, through the chair, as you know, probably I serve as chair, and I am absolutely proud to tell you that no, we box, we spar, but there's such a common thread of purpose, you know, that the commissioners are very healthy and very eager. They all show up ready to go, and nobody goes home mad. I guess if there was anything from my perspective that I would add here, is that I'm really close to it, and I'll admit that right up front, but I think this needs to be expanded. Our executive director is incredibly overworked, being a very good guy, and we're getting a really good deal, but that is not part of our proposal, as you can see. It's just for an extension, but I would consider that, you know, as a resource committee. You know.
Thank you very kindly.
Thank you. Other questions for the sponsor? Representative Kawasaki,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just kind of along the same lines, because this isn't a receipt-supported commission, so we didn't do an audit prior to introduction today. The one question I had, or just a general question, is there's no fiscal note on this?
Through the chair, Representative Kawasaki, yes.
Or maybe it's just not in our packet.
The cost to date, if there was an audit, would be travel, lodging for 3 regular meetings a year, and that's pretty much that covers it. We got a bit of a deposit, and I would turn to this executive director to give you specific numbers from the governor special after the summit, and we are still in the process of spending that wisely. So, in fact, it has barely touched it.
I got it. Thank you. I have a second question.
Just
a second question, actually. Do you know why the commission was disbanded in 1999?
Representative Kawasaki, through the chair, on that, I would defer on that question to the executive director because he was involved before and after, so I'm not going to even try.
Okay, and then I have another question I think you can answer.
One more question, then.
I was looking, thank you, Mr. Chairman, at the bulleted points dealing with the things that came out specifically. About half from a little bit more probably are more federal-level issues, but has this legislature or anybody else in the legislature or maybe even the governor utilized any of the recommendations that have been made?
Representative Kawasaki, through the chair, most definitely it's ongoing, like some of the recommendations that have to do with advising or interacting with the Department of Law. That's one of our roles, is to interact with the different agencies. It was happening before the recommendation came out, but things with, like on the lawsuits, and we have like the federal government, they imposed a I think it came from, I think it was U.S. Parks. I can't remember now, but there's a working on a state transportation plan that is supposed to include all the different agencies in the state, and that's one of the things. There's so many things that we've done, it's hard to separate what was motivated by the conference representative.
To that point, there's actually a recommendation on page 21, which is pushing for an ocean zoning monitoring process. That's the subject of a resolution that's just barely almost not passed. And so I personally know that there's good recommendations from this CACFA.
Thank you.
We've run out of time. I want to make sure we have the opportunity to hear from other folks. The executive director, Mr. Liephart, is online for questions from members of the committee.
Those.
Or, barring that, let's go to public testimony. Mr. Somerville, I believe you're the only person in person who wishes to testify. So if you'll come forward and give us your testimony on this bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, I'll make it very long.
realize we're running out of time. My name is Ron Somerville, 4506 Juneau. I've lived in the state for 73 years, I guess, something like that. The only thing I wanted to say here is, as mentioned by Representative Keller, there will be a report in more detail to the legislature with more recommendations and much more comprehensive than what you got in this here, relative just to the overreach issues. But I wanted to summarize something from an Alaskan standpoint. If you look at the state entitlement, we're losing. I want to say that clear. That's from my perspective. And I think it was everybody agreed to that. I asked the question at the summit, how many people feel the state has a severe overreach problem? Everybody but one person raised their hand. And the problem is we don't really know how to address it. I mean, we haven't to this date. I say everybody in this room, excuse me, the governor's office, our delegation, we're just not doing a very good job. The other thing is, if you look at that map up there, everything that's green is the federal government. And again, from a private citizen standpoint, we're being overwhelmed with planning. The organization I belong to, a sportsman's club here in Juneau, we used to comment on things relative to other parts of the state because it affected us. We can't do that anymore. We can't keep up with the forest land use management planning system here in Southeastern, plus all the national parks and stuff that are adjacent to us. I can tell you from everybody on the commission, people are being buried in paperwork. Now, then the question is, well, what has that got to do with this? The thing is that CAFA represents, in many cases, the individual who comes in with a problem that the agencies just don't have the time or the wherewithal to address. So we're saying things about Joe Pete out here, his cabin is being burned down or something by the Park Service. We take that issue on. I was really impressed, and I don't want to go into much more detail. I'll probably talk to some of you individually and as this thing progresses through the system, but I just wanted to say I honestly support this. We just have to continue with something of this nature, and I think the CAC has done a good job.
Thank you, Mr. Somerville. Is there anybody else here in person who'd like to testify? Seeing none, anybody online who would like to testify before we try and move this bill out? Yes. Mr. Liebhardt?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Do you have any public testimony you want to provide, or you just want to be available for answering questions?
I would like to make a statement, if that's okay with the committee.
Certainly.
Just wanted to call attention to something that Mr. Somerville brought up. In 2012, we reviewed approximately 15,000 pages worth of management plans from four different federal agencies. In the next year, we're going to be looking at management plans, new management plans for the Tongass National Forest, the Chugach National Forest, the area in Central Alaska called the Central Yukon Planning Area. It's a BLM plan is going to be done for that area. That includes the pipeline corridor and lands north of the Brooks Range. Another area, BLM area plan, the Bering Sea Western Interior Plan, that covers several million acres of BLM land in Western Alaska. In addition, we're looking at two management plans for two national park units that are being revised, Gates of the Arctic and Lake Clark National Park and Preserve. One of the things that we look for when we look at a management plan is how are the guarantees and promises that were made in the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act, ANILCA, how are they being recognized, how are they being complied with? And this is one of the things that we see time and time again as time passes since passage of that statute, the institutional memory and knowledge of the federal agencies disappears. And so we're constantly reminding them, hey, this was a guarantee, and Alaskans are guaranteed access into these huge management areas by means that aren't traditional or not commonly used in the lower 48. And these are the kind of issues, as Mr. Somerville pointed out, cabin use. Accommodations were made for cabins that exist in these areas. Commercial fishing activities. We just recently reviewed a management plan for dealing with onshore commercial fishing activities on Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge. All of these are special considerations that were built into that Alaska Lands Act and that we are constantly having to remind the federal agencies that they need to recognize, they need to provide for these uses in their management plans, and they need to avoid, I guess for lack of a better word, reneging on the promises that were made when that piece of legislation was passed. So that's kind of what we try to do. We try to poll the public, talk to public user groups, stakeholders, if you will, and find out what their concerns are with respect to management of these areas. So I'll leave it at that, and be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Leopard. I think reneging is a splendid word. Any other questions for the Representative Kawasaki? Apparently has questions.
Thank you. I had a couple questions that were unanswered earlier, but the first question, I guess, is that if you've only been around since 2007, what agencies or what other groups, and what is the state actually doing then? It sounds like you guys are doing a lot of work that maybe the state ordinarily did before, or resource committee members used to do, or something to that effect.
Representative Kawasaki, through the chair. The State ANOCA program, of course, looks at many of these same management plans, many of these same regulatory proposals. They, however, tend to focus on how this planning effort or regulation package will affect state management prerogatives. We reach out more to the public, to the user groups. We have provided in the past in the Sturgeon lawsuit, Mr. John Sturgeon has brought suit against the National Park Service against a set of regulations that allows the National Park Service to regulate activities on any waters within the boundaries of a national park. We spent several weeks doing research into the legislative history of ANILCA to provide that background information for the Department of Law. So we work pretty well together with all the other state agencies, but we tend to bring a little bit of different focus, a little different perspective into that process.
Thank you. And the question wasn't answered.
Very brief question. No,
the question that Representative Keller wasn't able to answer was dealing with why CACFA was disbanded after 1999 in the sponsor statement and was gone for 99 to 2007, I think it is.
Representative Kawasaki, through the chair. I was originally hired by the original commission that was created by Senator Betty Fahrenkamp back in 1981. I was originally hired in 1982, and I worked for the commission as the director until it was defunded in June of 1999. And that was the reason that was a time of budget crisis, if you will, declining budgets. We were attached to the Department of Natural Resources at that time, as we are now. The budget was decreased for the department, and the department made the choice to eliminate the commission from funding. The authorization continued for another couple of years, but it sunsetted, I believe, in 2001. And that's the reason the commission ceased to function at that time.
Thank you, Mr. Leopard. I'd like to finish off public testimony if we can. Mr. Al Barrett is in Fairbanks. If you're online, you can hear me, Mr. Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Al Barrett. I reside at 380 Pega Road, Fairbanks. I didn't originally come here to testify, but seeing Stan here, I want to, as an Alaskan citizen, I just wanted to give my support for this committee. I'm also vice chair of the Fairbanks Advisory Committee, and I participate in the federal RAC system, the federal subsistence boards. And CAPTA has been very important in giving us information to make informed comments and decisions to both the Board of Game and to the federal subsistence arena. And so, when we're dealing like 40 mile, when they were revising the management plan for the 40 mile area, that was a 12-pound document. And here the federal government's expecting citizens, Alaskans, to read a 12-pound document and make comments on it, within their comment period. And this is just way overwhelming for any of us here, any of you in that room, to absorb and realize and make conscious decisions on what they're trying to do or what they're not trying to do in a 12-pound document. So I would ask that you continually support this. I find all their meetings, these people that are on the CAFA committee, are very informed, very well educated prior to the meeting, and I always learn something at their meetings with whoever they bring in and how the meetings are conducted. So I find it a very, very well informed and a very useful resource, and I think you guys could even find that you could get really good information from this committee. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Barrett. Pardon me. Good deal. Anybody online want to testify? Anybody in person want to testify? With that, we'll close public testimony, and I would ask the will of the committee. Representative P. Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move House Bill number 244 out of committee with individual version A, out of committee with individual recommendations, and on to the next committee.
Thank you. Any objection?
Object for discussion.
We have an objection from Representative Seaton. Discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just, you know, there's lots of recommendations in here, and I want to just make sure that it's on the record that passing this bill does not mean we're passing all those recommendations. You know, on page 21, we have pushed to assume primacy for Section 404 under clean water permitting. You know, we've already got 12 or 14 employees now just studying it. If we would take that over, we'd have to take it one time. That's going to include 40 to 50 new state employees to do that. And to do it, we have to be at least as restrictive or at least as strict as the federal government's implementation of those standards and criteria. So at this time, I just want to make sure that it's on the record that, you know, I'm going to support passage of this, but I am not saying that that supportive passage of keeping this good set of Alaskans at the table and commenting on things means that we support every individual recommendation coming forward with it. So it is, with that, I'll remove my objection.
Thank you, Representative Seaton, and recognizing it is an advisory council. Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I know he's removed his objection, but I don't want to end on that. I think there's not much we're going to do that's much more important than this. As many of you know, I am the incoming chair of CSG West. The western states are terribly overburdened. Every state in the union is looking at doing something, what we're doing, except I think Delaware, which has no federal lands. There is a national task force, and if you go to the Big Seven, which is NCSL, CSG, Conference of Governors, Western Waters, it's a number of the big organizations, they are all tackling federal overreach. We have the most to lose, and quite frankly, we're the furthest ahead, which should scare everyone. Because we are out front, and as I often say, we're the tip of the spear when it comes to federal regulations. I think re-implementing this is critical. I have used this personally when I talk to other legislators from other states to garner support for trying to rein in, which I think is a overburdensome federal government. So I would try to end on a more positive note than not accepting everything. I don't want to think, Paul, I wasn't saying, or Representative Seaton, I wasn't saying yours was negative, but I wanted to state publicly how important I think this is. And I know Labor and Commerce will be ticked if I continue to go on, because I could go on for hours. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I urge passage, and if my statement reinstituted objections, I will remove that.
I understand. Thank you, Representative Johnson. Briefly, to sponsor Representative Keller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for clarification, I'm very grateful you let me put this on the record. If you look at that report, it says very clearly in there that this is a comprehensive report of the recommendations that came forward, both by the commission and by the public in that process. It's very thorough. It was not intended, that you're approving any or all of the recommendations at all.
Except for the one about ocean policy. Yeah. Any objection remaining? I just want to say, Representative Wilson.
I would like to add that we're going to pass the fiscal note on with it.
Right. For the record, the motion to pass is with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. I just would say for the record, too, that I've been impressed with the work of CACFA. I support their mission. There is an unfair contest between our state government and federal government, and I think this helps us balance that contest somewhat more in our favor, in our citizens' favor. With that, no objection being removed, the bill passes out without objection. We are adjourned at 7 after 3.